chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it?
Hello, I'm Frank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Alley. Dave's continuing on the board. SP Futures down 13.50. NASDAQ Futures down 33. Dow Futures down 115. This is another pretty strong day yesterday, except for the NASDAQ was down yesterday, but the rest of the market was up. SP was up 16. Dow was up 152. Set another intraday record, but then closed below that. Do we have Mr. Lou?
Good morning, sir.
How are you? So are you?
I'm just peachy.
You going to represent the coach from Washington, or we were thinking you were?
I doubt if he'll reach out to me, but I have filed another lawsuit this time on behalf of federal employees who are being forced to get the vaccine under the president's mandate for federal workers and federal contractors. And so we're going to try to stop that if we can.
Is this just a power play by these people? If one governor does something stupid, another guy has to just to prove he's as strong as, or what?
No, I think what you're seeing play out here is a kind of tribal politics of, you know, I want everybody to show that they're on my team, and I think what drives the train right now of the FDA vaccine that really was, or the FDA's licensing of Pfizer, which really wasn't a licensing because you can't get the vaccine that FDA actually licensed here in the United States, at least not yet in any quantity. You look at that decision, you look at the president then rushing out the military mandate and then rushing out the federal executive employee mandate. This is a version of the TSA thing that we saw back after 9/11. The idea that, you know, the idea that government has to do something, anything, and the belief that part of our elected politicians that the public must see some kind of action demonstrating control over the situation, or we're all going to lose the next election. And once you start that process, these bureaucratic entities that you engage to do this, you know, they develop their own momentum. So every State Department of Public Health now feels like they're, you know, Captain Marvel in terms of what they've been asked to do, that everybody's rushing to them for advice. You know, and the truth of the matter is they're really not that competent in this situation. The CDC hasn't proved itself to be anything special. You know, FDA definitely has not, if you look at the history of what was happening with regard to testing and mass production. I mean, they did some things well, but in terms of providing guidance, they really haven't done very well. But they see this as a chance for a tremendous power grab, and so the governors of these various states, who tend authoritarian anyway, and I think that's the case with most of the blue states. These folks tend authoritarian, or trend authoritarian anyway. So they look around and say, "We got to do something. Our voters expect us to do something. The state is the thing that solves all problems. Well, what can we do? Well, we can tell everybody to get vaccinated." I'm astounded at the bait and switch that's been conducted by the FDA on this, and the fact that the press is not pounding the president with the fact that we don't have any licensed vaccine in the United States, and that all these mandates are taking place on a vaccine that is an emergency use authorization, and some fairly specific law under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act that says you can't give these shots to people without giving them the option to refuse. And so, you know, that ought to be front and center on you know, Good Morning America and whatever else people watch these days, but it's not. And I just in any event, what you're seeing happen with these governors is this: we got to do something, we got to do something, we got to do something, so it looks like we're not powerless and stupid. And the vaccine is an easy way to do that, and it's an easy way to measure it. And what has happened, and I see this, you see this rolling across social media, is that this has now gone tribal. And so now it's a question of, are you with us or are you against us? And it's the science is not even being discussed, because the science is that it doesn't matter if you get the shot, you're still going to get sick. It doesn't matter if you get the shot, you can still spread it, but the effect on you might be minimized or mitigated as a result of getting the vaccine. But the short answer is, the things we typically vaccinate people for, i.e. to contain the spread of a disease, they're not working with this stuff.
No, they don't work.
If you could still spread it and you could still catch it, then what do you care whether somebody else is vaccinated? You know, your choice is, I'm going to take the vaccine to mitigate my symptoms if I catch the disease. But, you know, you really don't have any right, I would think, under those circumstances, to demand that somebody else get the shot.
Well, I understand what it's interesting to me how much has changed, and I know that, you know, sometimes I give the old guy swap here, but the lean toward authoritarianism when I was, you know, in my 30s and 40s clearly was on the right. We were worried about people like Cheney and Romney and those the neocon goofballs that, you know, wanted to take really that to make the president a dictator and start wars on their own and things. You worried about those guys. Now I worry totally on the left is the people wanting to take over the place. I mean, how did that all happen?
Well, I think what you're seeing is a move from the universities of these elects. I'm going to use John McWhorter's term, the elects, the progressive, well-educated progressive elites, mostly white, who absorbed this intellectual conformity in college, and they've moved into leadership positions.
They're enforcing what they were
taught in college, and in many cases were taught in high school, that there's a moral element to all of these social justice crises that they promote. I mean, the first time I became aware of this moralizing was with gun control, and how you know, when you tried to have a policy discussion with somebody about gun control, it evolved very quickly into you're an evil person if you don't assume my position. The same thing has happened with climate change. The same thing has happened with welfare reform. The same thing has happened with homelessness. The same thing has happened with gender identity issues. And as a result, because these people view this as a moral issue, and literally, Chief, this is something you and I've talked about. This replaces religion, by the way, in their worldview. You know, they view this with a kind of religious moral fervor that brooks no dissent and justifies in their own mind the imposition of state power to enforce their opinions.
Well, everybody feels that religion is worth nothing. Any kind of morals are worth nothing. It's you decide yourself what the morals are. But Lou,
I'd say it's exactly the opposite. I'd say there's a very clear set of moral principles that are all tied around political policies and political decision making. They are backed by a faith that in their correctness that ignores data. I mean you're seeing this play out in Chicago.
Yeah.
with your state's attorney. It ignores data, it ignores reality, and presses on the ground with the understanding that if only we could get a little bit more of whatever it is we're doing now that's not working, we would have success.
Well, we've had some interesting discussions this week with some attorney guys, some people like you. But in fact, we had a few adult beverages the other night, and with one of my attorney pals and the young couple that lives upstairs, and they're terrific. But the mindset is so totally different. I mean, this week we've been talking on the economic side. One of the reasons I honestly believe that the supply chain problems are there, of course we can go into that in a bit, but are because individual people either don't have the instinct anymore, or the ability, which is very possible because the big people seem to stop anybody else from starting something up, to actually fill some of these holes in the supply chain. I mean, the reason why we never had very seldom had holes in supply chain is because somebody would immediately recognize the need and look to fill it and look to make money doing it. That's the American way. But now everybody looks not only to their politicians to solve their problems, but they look at big companies to solve the other problems. Well, why doesn't Procter & Gamble make more something else? Instead of saying, geez, if they can't do it, I can do it. You know, type. I mean, it's a whole different mindset. And it's the same mindset.
Let me address that very quickly with you. This goes back to something you've talked about many times, and that is that much of our regulatory system is designed to prevent precisely what you just described.
Exactly right.
The entry costs of starting a business in a whole host of things, even things as simple as hairdressing or nails, are so high that it's very difficult for an individual to step up and say, you know what, I can pull this together and make this work. I did see an interesting example, however, of something that that looks like a startup and was pulled together by some very smart engineers, and it's the nuclear reactor on a flatbed truck concept that has been put forward by some former SpaceX guys who have come up with basically a self-contained nuclear reactor that is not going to have a meltdown. Requires fueling every 8 years. It's small enough to fit on the back of a flatbed truck in a shipping container, and self-contained. You can take it, park it. It's modular. You can scale it up, scale it down. One unit provides enough energy for electricity for 1,000 homes for 8 years. Then you refuel it. You could plug them together. And I thought, okay, that's a startup. And it's five or six of these guys that got together, and they developed the concept, they worked out the engineering, they went out and got some seed money, and are running with it.
Okay, but they're not going to get anywhere with Commonwealth Edison. Either doesn't own them, or let them in, or do something.
No. But this is the development of this kind of a power system is pretty good. So the question now is, are they going to be able? Can you imagine an autonomous political entity like a city or a county saying, you know what, we're not going to plug ourselves into the grid anymore. I'm going to buy five or six of these units, and I can set up a neighborhood that's completely off the grid with its own electricity, and we're going to set that up and we're going to run it.
I guarantee you
they would have more regulatory roadblocks dropped in front of them, in 10 seconds.
And the big guys will be shoving money in the ass pocket of every politician around to make sure they can't do it.
I think that's correct. But let me go back to your earlier point. I think the vaccine mandates are insane. I think they are not based on science. They are based on this religious fervor that we have to get everybody to be a member of the tribe, and this is a loyalty test, and this is how we'll sort out the people who are believers. I mean, this is exactly what's happening in the military.
Well, let me give you the millennial comeback to what you just said, because I just got it the other night. The millennial comeback is, what's the big deal? It's safe enough. Just take it. Why cause problems? And oh, by the way, you got a measles vaccine, don't you? Why the hell is this any different?
This is the result of giving everybody participation trophies. Go along to get along, and let's not make waves. I mean, I'm sorry, this is ridiculous. You're being ordered by the state to inject an unlicensed vaccine. Let's do that for starters. An unlicensed vaccine that doesn't do what a measles vaccine or a mumps vaccine
does. I'm with you.
It's an individual prophylactic.
Well, what,
like, you know, like the flu vaccine.
But my point that I'm trying to make here is it's not about whether it's a good idea or not. It's about, in America, we don't get told to do stuff by people like that. I mean, by the way, I've never been, Joan Esposito, who I love, I've never been asked back on her show because she said something about, why am I still going to work? And I said, Joan, I look at it like this. I said, you know, when I was younger, I used to go, if it was like zero out, not 20 below, but it was zero out in a calm night, there was nothing more gorgeous than going running in Lincoln Park while you were by yourself. And you had nothing but stars. Life wasn't any more beautiful, especially if there was snow on the ground. And I said, you know, if I called my mom, she's going to be a mom and say, what are you, an idiot? But that's what moms do, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And if I hear on the radio, by the way, it's so cold that we're taking people off the streets. And by the way, if you do something stupid like go out running and you have a grabber and you fall down, you're probably going to freeze before they get to you. I get all that, Lou. Tell me all that stuff. Just don't tell me not to go. This is America.
Exactly. Well, I mean, this is, so I had a conversation with one of my married relatives by marriage.
An in-law.
And she was.
An in-law.
Yes. She was talking about, you know, she's a big believer in state authority and the elect's ability, the elect, apostrophe S, ability to rule over us in an intelligent, thoughtful way that will benefit everybody else. And as long as you're one of the elect, this is the way you think. You know, you believe in the philosopher king concept of Plato. And she said, I don't, and she's been an expat for more than 20 years. And she said, I just don't understand the resistance to doing things that are good for you. And I said, okay, let me give you, you've been away from America too long because you don't understand and your friends in the elect circles don't understand that a significant part of the American culture is tied up in something that I refer to as the Bastogne mentality. And she had no idea what that meant. I don't know if you remember the story about the Battle of Bastogne in the Second World War.
So
McAuliffe, who was the head of the 101st Airborne,
that's what the guy said,
basically
nuts. That's what the guy said,
surrounded.
Nuts.
Sorry?
That's what the guy said, nuts?
Yes. Surrounded at the town of Bastogne. They have no hope of escape. The Germans are going to obliterate them. The German commander sends a message into McAuliffe saying, if you don't surrender, we're going to destroy you. Let's act like civilized people, surrender and come out and save all the bloodshed. To which McAuliffe replied, I think the note actually said balls.
Yeah.
But the American press made it nuts. The Germans had no idea what the idiom meant. But it's the functional equivalent of those posters that we used to see in high school, the last great act of defiance, showing the mouse flipping off the hawk that's coming in with the claws spread, you know, ready to grab him. I mean, there's a significant part of Americanism is basically telling people, screw you, just because they told you to do something.
Well,
there's a high degree of that, and especially when it's the state doing it, and the people who allegedly work for you, a bunch of people coming in and telling you, I know what's better for you than you do.
But some people can't, when I say this, you and I, what I'm sensing here, and now I know what people were like when they were older, when I was younger, and argue with them, but I'm sensing there's a difference in the, when my parents, my dad served in the war and all that kind of stuff, and my mom worked for the Quartermaster Corps. Get a load of this, Lou. She was in resignations and terminations. Well, you couldn't quit, and they didn't fire anybody. She said they fired one guy for bringing a gun. She was there 2 years. They had one person to deal with. But that was her job.
Now, my aunt, like she was really good at it.
Yeah, so my aunt was in spaghetti, macaroni, and noodles, and finding places to buy that for the Army. So she was in procurement of spaghetti, macaroni, and noodles. So they were at that place on Pershing Road where that big, huge warehouse of the school board moved in for a while. That's where they were. It was a quartermaster corps. But in that generation was all, you know, you had people like, you know, Roosevelt, you had Truman, you had Eisenhower, you had people you believed, right? You had George Marshall. You had serious people that you made it to the top of the food chain, and they belong there, I think, mentally, for sure. So when it comes to Vietnam, and of course you've got this massive difference in the generations where all of a sudden you've got a bunch of buffoons in Washington starting doing body counts and other kinds of crap. And my mom was one of the few people that could bridge the gap. She says, you know, World War II, your father went, your uncle went, didn't come back. And she said, in a regular situation, we wouldn't dodge the draft or anything. You'd go. This is our country. She goes, but this Vietnam thing, I don't get it. Something's wrong here. There's no way on earth you're going to be the last guy killed in Vietnam. We'll do something. She sensed the difference. And now, these people are not Roosevelt. These people are not George Marshall. I don't know who they are. They're a bunch of buffoons, it seems to me. And yet now they want more power than those people ever dreamed of taking. I don't get it, Lou. And everybody's going along with it.
I think, again, what you're seeing is the natural authoritarian and big government trend being exposed here. And COVID, you know, is a nice mechanism to do that. This gives the Whitmers and the, your toilet governor, Pritzker, and a number of other people, Newsom out in California, Inslee in Washington, it gives these folks the opportunity to let loose, and their staffs to let loose their inner dictators and inner fascists, because in their heart of hearts, they believe that most people are stupid, that they actually have the insight and the vision to govern the hoi polloi effectively, and they have nothing but disdain for people, because you didn't go to Harvard, you don't have my credentials, whatever. One of the most irritating things that popped out early on in my discussions with friends about the virus and what was happening with it was the fact that they kept saying, well, you're not an entomologist or an epidemiologist. And I said, no, but I can read a graph.
Yeah.
And I can look at the graphs that show when a mask mandate was imposed and when a lockdown was imposed. And I can see that the cases continued to rise with absolutely no impact. So I don't need to have a science degree to be able to say, okay, this happened and then this didn't happen.
I get those I get those emails and texts to the show all the time.
Oh yeah, you guys don't know anything. I mean, it was hilarious, and I told these folks, my friends, I said, you know, your faith in experts is totally misplaced.
Lou, I think something else missing, though. I mean, sorry to interrupt, but I remember when I was a young kid at Pullman, I learned a boatload there. I was going to say something else. There was a respect. Even the guy who was the plant manager was respectful to the other people. And one day, I said something about, well, this, you know, guy's out, he's one of the, this guy's like a welder or something. No disrespect. And the plant manager goes, Tom, he's not just a welder. The guy commanded a destroyer for 2 years in the South Pacific. He's more than just a welder. He's like a real guy. They never assumed that the person with the job like less than them was dumber than them or was less accomplished. He just happened to be a welder. But he said that guy was in like three or four major campaigns. I'm never going to think he's an idiot. I couldn't carry his shoes is what the guy told me.
You saw this with the, admittedly, she had other problems, but you saw this on the reaction to the nomination of Sarah Palin for vice president. The immediate attack on her was that she went to public university and she'd switched schools through her education. I mean, I heard women, you know, tell me this, upper class, well-educated, progressive, elect women say, well, she can't be very bright because she went to, you know, she went to the University of Idaho and then switched to some other university.
Ooh, they didn't like her because she's smoking. They didn't like her because she's smoking hot. Who's kidding?
And I said, she's been the governor of a major of a state, for heaven's sakes. I mean, she has more executive experience than Barack Obama does. So, yeah. So, you know, don't give me this. But they said, no, you know, this credentialing issue is a huge thing, and that is attached to all of these discussions about the virus and the vaccination program, and I will tell anybody who listens that I dealt with Fauci when I was involved with the anthrax, the military's mandatory anthrax vaccination program, and we shut that down, and I had the pleasure of telling a federal judge that the National Institutes of Health and the Centers for Disease Control and the Institutes of Medicine did not know what they were talking about when they said that this vaccine was properly licensed. And you know, my experience, Chief, is varied, but one thing rings true. When you see agencies like that with smart people in them doing stupid things or things that make no sense data-wise, scientifically, you look to a political reason for their behavior.
Or a money reason. Joe, we got to go to break here.
Exactly what's happening with the vaccine and with the mandates.
We got to go to break. You know, your friend Sarah Palin, one of the when she was dealing with the oil companies, and she was about as right-wing as it gets, and she goes, you know what? Every time I talk to these people, all he did was lie. I had to check up on everything they promised me. So her view of big business was not what you normally would expect on the right.
No. I mean, she was a realist.
Yeah.
That's why she was a reasonably effective governor.
Plus, she was very attractive and is still. So not that I noticed. SP Futures down 12. NASDAQ Futures down 41. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, and it's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Get ready.
And jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Let's go. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. What happens when your producer tells you to let go before he turns your mic on?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. What do you? Hey, hurry up, hurry up. Oops, maybe I'll turn your mic on. Anyway, S&P futures down 1175. NASDAQ futures down 43. Dow futures down 95. I think one of the reasons for this, although it's not one of those things where, market down is David exits the can. I mean, it's not that it doesn't work that way, but the Evergrande deal that everybody came up with last week, when Evergrande was a big problem, the market was heading down, then they were supposedly had this deal with some other firm over there. The deal kind of fell through, but they also have some kind of a bond extension, so it's kind of mixed news out of Evergrande here, but, it's clearly not, it's not like the problem's over with those guys. I mean, it's how big of a problem it is. I mean, who the hell knows, but it's not over. It wasn't like we solved that one a week ago. We didn't. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 9, call that flat. FTSE down 37.5%. CAC around down 25.4%. Over in Asia, you got the Nikkei down 546. It's almost 2%. Evergrande was down, like 12% in trading in Hong Kong, so that was a problem there. Shanghai up 7, it's 0.2%. Hang Seng down 118, which is probably including the Evergrande. I'm not so sure they're in the, they're probably not in the index, but, anyway, they're down 118, which is 0.5%. Yesterday is the way we had up 152 in the Dow yesterday. We're up 16 in the S&P. NASDAQ was actually down a little bit though, down 7, so I guess they broke their 4-day up streak. Bonds this morning are 1.66, plus 230 seconds. Not 30 seconds. Boy, show my age there, David.
Two
basis points. Bund up 1 basis point, only minus 10, which is, the highest we've seen there in a while. Less below 0. It's gonna help me a lot, David, when this thing goes positive, because like every morning I stumble on this thing.
It's gonna happen though.
Yeah, I think it is too. Japanese at, unchanged at 0.09. Oil, down 61 cents, 82.81. Brent down 96 cents, 84.86. Natural gas down 8 cents, 5.08, but they're back up over $5. Yesterday morning they were worth 4.99, I think. Down from 6.09. I can't get over this thing moving a dollar, natural gas, but it did. RBOB down 2 cents, 247. And we've got gold actually down $4 today, but it was up pretty good yesterday. 1780, so still kind of closing in on 1800. Silver down 28 cents, 24.16. I was trying to do something bullish in there yesterday, and I didn't get it. Maybe I'll get it today cheaper, David. What do you think? Copper down 12 cents, 461. And we've got crypto down 1,300. When I say crypto, Bitcoin down 1,365,115. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? A couple more guys shot last night, eh?
Yeah. 637 in Chicago. There's always a shooting in Chicago.
Yeah.
Currently, it's 56 and cloudy. It's probably going to be our highs today. A lot cooler today. High will be 57, cloudy, maybe a little bit of rain. Phoenix listeners, it's start out the day at 59 and clear. They're going to have a beautiful day, 91 and sunny. In traffic, we have normal buildups on the Kennedy, Eisenhower, and the Stevenson due to construction. There's slow traffic on an exit ramp at Kennedy West at East River Road. In sports, NBA opening night, the Bulls actually won. Beat the Pistons 94-88. Nuggets 110, Suns 98. In baseball last night, the Braves beat the Dodgers. Take a 3-1 lead, and Houston beats Boston 9-1 to go up 3-2 in the series.
I was at the AAA there. Boy, there was no life there.
Yeah.
The Boston, bye.
NFL tonight, Broncos at Browns. Bears are at the Bucks Sunday, and Texans are at Arizona. NHL, the Canucks are at the Hawks tonight. And in football, NCAA football, USC at Notre Dame Saturday night. Back to you.
Lou, remember your girlfriend? I actually had a cup of coffee with her the other day, Angelica.
Oh, really? Oh, good. How is she doing?
Actually, she just had a pretty nasty bout with COVID. 103, no vaccine, of course, which, you know, again, I'll argue against the governors doing what they're doing, but I would like to see individual people. I get it, because I think you don't get it as bad when you
let me just put this argument out that I, you know, again, this is my personal opinion, so the listeners can you know, reject or whatever. The analysis goes something like this. The vaccine mitigates individual risk. So a choice, you should have a choice about getting vaccinated based on your individual risk assessment.
Right.
For you, for me, our risk assessment is going to be different than that of Dave or Maddie or Angelica. And that should be the move. This one size fits all, solution from government is ridiculous. The idea that we're vaccinating mandatory vaccinations for 18-year-olds and below is stupid and unsupported by the science. The vaccinations for people, I think, under the age of about 40 really don't make much sense. But again, the risk assessment, you know, your mileage may vary. Risk assessments may vary for individuals. But the idea that the government is saying you have to get vaccinated if you're a federal contractor or a federal employee makes no sense whatsoever. And I guess my personal opinion is this is an individual choice, like a number of other vaccines or inoculations that we get that really don't contain the spread, but individually might make you better. And that's why it should be an individual choice.
The only thing, Lou,
you're not going to affect getting a population vaccinated, as we've seen demonstrated in Great Britain and in numerous states, does not cut the spread of the virus.
No, it's people getting it
on individuals.
People already having it. But here's what I mean. As you know, I'm usually in the middle on most topics because you. I am sort of on this one too, Lou. I've never, from the stuff I started reading, well, a year ago, February, I have more respect for how difficult this disease is to manage because it hits people very differently. I mean, I was actually, you know, I had some health issues when I got it. I never even knew I had it. I mean, if I didn't take the test, I wouldn't even know I had it. I maybe had a slight headache for a couple of days. And I'm in the absolute risk pool. And yet, Angelica is healthy as a horse. She's 25 years old. And she had 103 fever for like 4 days and now has no sense of smell. So even though I know what you're saying in terms of risk of dying and so forth, the simple fact is a lot of young people are having trouble with this. I mean, it is not as even.
And a lot of young people are having very serious difficulties with the vaccine.
Yes, yes. I understand.
The risk trade-off.
But the idea, but here's what I don't get, Lou. And I don't, you know, we're going to get a bunch of stuff saying I'm not a doctor, which I'm not. But here's what I don't get: is we are going basically balls to the wall to vaccinate people that are 7 or 8 years old. We're going right down that road, and Pfizer's driving the bus. Every study seems to be funded by them and so forth. And now Sweden, on the other hand, just banned any kind of, I believe it's Sweden. Any vaccinations for people under what, 16 or something? Now,
yeah, the Scandinavian countries have effectively banned. I think it's the Moderna and AstraZeneca, and I think the Johnson & Johnson vaccines. I'm not sure if they've banned the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine from kids, but they've dropped all restrictions and requirements for vaccinations anyway because they understand what their public policy is based on the science.
Here's what I don't get, Lou, and this is why, you know, I've read a lot about
our public policy right now is being driven by the fact that this president campaigned on a position that he was going to manage COVID, whereas the orange bad man did not. And remember that Donald Trump got blamed for every single death in the United States by all kinds of hysterical people in the mainstream press. And Biden campaigned on his ability to manage that. He's failing. And everybody knows he's failing. And so they're desperately trying to lock on to something that they could point to and say, look, we're doing this, and if it doesn't work, it's on you.
But my point, Lou, is somewhere along the line, you got to do what you think is the right thing. And guys like Roosevelt, Army guys like Roosevelt, developed their source, their information sources outside of the channels. That was essentially the big theme, really, of the Winds of War, right? And now
Kennedy did the same thing.
Well, now if I'm in this day if you and I, imagine you and I sharing the president's job like co-counsels in Russia.
No,
that would be interesting. I have a hunch we'd agree on just about everything that anybody cared about. We'd argue about the rest. You and I would have to argue no matter what it was, even if it was a football game. But that's just what we are. But the point is, how do you not pick up the goddamn phone and call the president of Sweden on the QT, not tell anybody, use your cell phone for God's sake, call the guy up and say, look, this is what my people are telling me here. Your people are telling you something different over there. What are you hearing that I'm not? Because clearly, the head of Sweden...
Again, this is a religious conviction by these people, okay? This is religious fervor.
Lou, in that job, you got to care about your people and the lives. You know. I don't need any religious conviction.
They do. They're just convinced. They do. They're just convinced that they've got the right answer. It's a matter of faith, and the data is going to turn eventually.
Lou,
how many companies have you seen run into the ground by senior management that refused to acknowledge the data that was coming in right in front of them? And said, you know, if we just keep going down this path, we'll pull out eventually.
Yeah, but Lou, this is the part I don't get. People know on the show that I'm so against what the Fed is doing. I think we're walking down the wrong alley, and we're gonna fall into a sewer here. I know it. I've seen it because we saw it before, and I've read about it in 15 other places, which most people don't do because they got more sanity than I do. But when I turn around and manage people's money and they want to be in the market, I put them in the market. I do what I'm supposed to do. That's my job. I protect them. So in case Armageddon does hit, we don't get nailed anywhere near like anybody else getting nailed. And maybe even if I really catch it lucky, we don't even get nailed at all. But the point is, that's what I do. I mean, I can get elected on all this crap. But once I'm there, my job as president is to protect the people in this country. If I see two other nations with the same thing happening to them take a totally different position, I gotta know why.
The people in this administration, this president is, in my opinion, intellectually defective. What he ran on is not what's happening right now. He is surrounded with a group of ideologues, and he is deferring to them, and their worldview is not: our first obligation is to take care of people. It's their worldview is we have to change United States culture and society to make it look like what we think the perfect country will look like. And then that will benefit the people.
That's why we need a Washington, Lincoln, or Roosevelt, or Truman, and we don't need a Trump or a Biden. Duh.
Well, Trump was the reaction to this mindset.
Yeah, yes, I agree.
That we know what's better for you than you do.
But still,
the guy's a jerk. I mean, his comments after the death of Colin Powell. Somebody needs to just kick him in the head down there. But he's a jerk. But his political instincts were reasonably sound.
Oh, absolutely.
In terms of policy, and he did a lot less. He actually did a lot of good. His economic,
agree.
I mean, from the standpoint of earnings and a solid economy until COVID came along, he managed things well, especially given that he was under assault from a slow moving coup attempt that started before he was even elected.
Well, I think he was not very intellectually, he couldn't think things through. He never followed stuff through. He didn't understand the system. When he started to bust up the China situation, he had no idea what effect that would have on us because he never understood the economy other than New York and paying off people and pissing people off and brutalizing them. That was his way of doing business. He had no idea of where all this stuff comes from and how intertwined we are with everything. I mean, I'm not sure I do either. I mean, nobody knows the whole piece of it. But Lou, the dude had pictures of magazines on his desk that had his pictures on them, not even a computer, for God's sake.
You're not going to get any arguments from me. He reminds me, in many ways, as I've said before, of my absolute worst clients. And yet, I generally agreed with most of his policies, and he was a pushback against this kind of ideological craziness that is dominating our national
right now. He's the one guy on the other side that instead of having 50 years of people getting paid off in Congress, and Obama really was a reaction to that too, because he was new enough that people didn't think he was that co-opted.
People didn't understand he was a Chicago machine politician.
Yeah, they didn't get that part. But the fact is, he's young, good-looking, and he wasn't there long enough to get co-opted, but it turns out he ended up being co-opted, in my opinion. Now, but Trump, he gets in, but he was the first guy that the blue-collar person would said, that guy knows what it's like to be on the other side of government, that if you're not paying off, if you're not doing something, he feels my pain. And whether he did or he didn't, I don't know, but at least he talked a good game. I mean, everybody, I think, needs to listen to, if it's probably still on YouTube somewhere, Michael Moore's, when all the people on the right will say, oh, geez, Michael Moore. Michael Moore, who's to me is a brilliant guy in terms of how he does stuff. But he actually did a thing about why Trump was going to win the election. How, you know, the economy has gotten so bad for regular people in the middle class that the guys sold the second car, sold the boat, lost his wife, and the people who were making $40 an hour, you know, 40 years ago are now making 25. That's middle America, Lou. That's why when I talk, I mean, I don't know if you listen, but, and I know people are getting tired of hearing it, maybe I'm getting tired of saying it, but right now, if you take the middle America we have over the last 25, 30, 40 years and see what's happened to them money-wise, if you drop a general inflation on top of those people, you might as well stick them in the nuts with something. I mean, it's horrible. You can't do that to these people that haven't had a raise really in 20 years while the prices have tripled around them. Now we're going to do it. We're going to do it right now.
The elect don't see that, and to a certain extent, they will not listen to it because they believe that the opinions of those people without their Ivy League educations and without their top flight high school educations and without those degrees, they are not people worth listening to, as opposed to the people that they see on an everyday basis at their parties and their fairs and their gatherings.
Lou, since we've been on the show together, I would never have disagreed with you on that 6 years ago. Now I will. And tell me if I'm nuts, because I obviously don't mind being critiqued by you. Tell me if I'm nuts. I've seen it happen now so many times that it's not them not willing to listen to Milton Friedman in 1970. It's not, well, certainly not them willing to listen to me. I don't have a PhD or anything or a Nobel Prize. But I mean, not them listening. I think that more I learn about inflation and more I go back to other countries and so forth, there is a certain group that really benefits by it. And I don't think it's them just being, that Powell is just too dumb to listen to me about inflation. I don't think that's the case at all. I think he knows exactly who he's helping and who he's hurting, and he's helping the people he wants to help. And somebody who's put him out, it has nothing to do with them. Just not Lou. I don't think they're making a mistake.
I don't think that's wrong. I what I would say is these people are ideologically convinced that the deplorables, and you heard Obama make that reference, and Hillary Clinton too. They don't listen to that half of the country or that part of the country because they believe they are morally and intellectually inferior. By the way, the policies that we're putting in place aren't hurting us, so we're going to continue with them. I guarantee you. I mean, look at the one thing. You know, one of the things Trump did that really hit the elect hard, and that was the income tax deduction for real estate and state taxes. Basically, the rest of the country was subsidizing the elites, the elect, to live in New York and you know, California and other places.
That's another argument.
State tax burdens.
That's another argument you and I have to have, because I don't agree with that at all.
Well, but that tax that tax law that Trump revoked was a direct slap to the elect and the people that they ran around with. And that's one of the reasons why the Biden people have been, you know, adamant of getting rid of it, because that hurt their voter base. So they are perfectly willing to put stuff in that's consistent with their ideological viewpoints, unless it hurts their voter base.
The difference,
they pay attention.
Where you and I are on opposite sides of this, Lou, I don't think it has, in terms of the real money, the real scratch-o, the real wampum, whatever you want to call it, I don't think the ideology is to me is becoming non-existent. The same people benefited under Trump that are benefiting under this guy. The same people.
I wouldn't say quite as much.
Okay, 90%. But I'm saying the money elite, they're the ones that are. Who do you think when the stock market runs up like this? Because we're putting now. Granted, some of the people I manage money for are not 1%ers, but they're 10%ers, and a lot of them are. And 10% of the people own 90% of the stock. So, do you think they care whether or not the price of? I mean, they probably do because my people are really good people. Do you think they really care if the price of chicken goes up for some guy who hasn't a raise in 10 years, if their stock doubles because they're putting money in the system? You think they cry one tear for that guy? I do.
No.
Because I've been on that side, and I still, a lot of my family and friends and so forth are on that side. I get the, but do you think?
I would say that these things work together rather than this is I don't think this is a either or kind of cause.
It absolutely is. Absolutely is an either or. Some people benefit from inflation and some don't. Absolutely.
No. I mean in terms of motivation. I don't think it's either ideology or economics. I think it's a measure of both. But right now, I think ideology is predominant.
Lou, we got people on both sides of the aisle are trading the goddamn thing. They're trading the market. They're trading government news on both sides. How can you possibly have three people in the Fed, or was it two, that resigned for trading, and these guys just walk off to whatever job they had before without any sort of a, hey, you're going to be in the town square in stocks, or we're going to throw some aid? There's nothing whatsoever. And meanwhile, there's people around that people like you are defending to the best of their ability that are being persecuted for insider trading because they read like Newsweek or something.
Martha Stewart. Yeah. Martha Stewart's my favorite example on that.
Well,
I get what you're saying. I'm just saying that I think ideology is driving the train, and the economics, the economic benefits that arise out of this are, you know, they're nice and they're a side benefit, but they're not what's driving the worldview. They're not what's causing, for example, Department of Justice officials to retain their pensions after they you know, engaged in illegal conduct trying to undermine a president.
Well, that's something. There's no more. The Center for Disease Control. Every one of those guys should be fired. This is, and I'm sure there's brilliant people there, and maybe we'll rehire some of them. But Lou, this is the out they've been waiting their whole life for, and they didn't get the guy out.
I agree. Remember, I talked to you. This is my point earlier about competence, and you know we have these bureaucratic entities, and their goal is basically to sustain the bureaucratic entity rather than be really good at their jobs.
And
like I said, if you look at the decisions that CDC was making, and still is making, they're being driven by politics. They're not being driven by science or disease eradication. I mean, that would be a nice benefit, but the real benefit is to make the executive branch look good and make their own and increase the size of their own fiefdoms.
Lou, I firmly
believe that.
I think you were on one of the days. I did it a few times. I'm going to say a year and a half ago. We only got a couple minutes here. If I could go back and find a rant somewhere, not that I want to spend my time listening to my old shows, but could find a rant, I would say that back when this all started to happen and all the people that had the political muscle could stay at home and get paid and not go to work. Not that, you know, a lot of individual firms, and it's their own business, did that too, and I'm sure did fine, and you know, whatever. Some people found they could work better. Whatever. None of that's my business. But what I did say all along was we became a two-part society. Some people are sitting in their ivory tower, but the police were supposed to still work. The guys downstairs in the fire department, They still were hopping in the truck together. There's a fire, eight people stuck in there. I don't care if you had a mask on or not.
Guys were still stocking stores.
Absolutely.
People were still flipping burgers.
Yeah, well, now all of a sudden, the people who were flipping burgers, like Dave was telling me, like the In-N-Out Burger in San Francisco, if they don't have vaccinations, they can't go to work. Policemen can't go to work. Firemen can't go to work. Give me a friggin' break. Nobody cared about those people a year and a half ago. Now we care about them having vaccinated. I'm going to say that 90% of them already had that. Nah, that's probably too high. 80% of them probably already had it, Louis. Nobody.
Oh, no. I think you're probably right with 90%. So, the point is simply this. You know, In-N-Out Burger said, we're not going to be the vaccine police. And there needs to be, as I said, this relentless push to vaccinate is not based on science. It's based on tribalism. We need you to demonstrate that you're a member of our tribe. And that's all it is.
But you also
that's why we're firing highly competent people without assessing the things that the law, the Americans with Disabilities Act, requires us to assess before we start making these choices.
But the elites need to realize that the guy who was making their sandwich a year ago in Jimmy John's didn't keep 6 feet apart in the kitchen, probably already had it. Nobody cared about him, but then you're going to sound like you care about these people. No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
No.
Not at all. Just saying, Lou. Just saying. By the way, your team, are you guys any good this year, Air Force?
They got a pretty good team. We'll find out. I mean, the acid test, the toughest team they'll play the regular season is coming up. And that's San Diego State. San Diego State's top 25. We'll see if we can stay with them.
You going?
They got good team speed. Teams with good team speed give us fits.
Well, speed kills. It's the softball it kills,
right,
for God's sake. All right, Lou, take care of yourself. SP Futures down 13 now. NASDAQ Futures down 60. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, I'm up against Action Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. He actually turned my mic on when he said go ahead this time. It's progress. Right.
Progress.
By the way, how did you like the fact that your entrance into the Rant Ryan is now fixed?
How about that? How many years?
It was about a year and a half.
It's more than a year and a half.
Might have been two, yeah. Yeah. SP Futures down 14. NASDAQ Futures down 61. We have Mr. Dan? We think we do.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. You know, we're arguing with Lou about all the stuff going on with firing people for not getting vaccines and stuff. So always, it's always a good fire up. Lou gets a lot of people like listening to him on Thursday morning for sure. And he's got the, I don't know if you listen to him, but he's suing the government over this vaccine thing, because they're trying to give these vaccines to, people that are in their 20s, like the Navy SEALs and stuff. The thing has not been approved yet here. And there's been a lot of instances that he seems to have found where people that have already had the disease that get vaccinated too quickly thereafter actually can have a problem. But he was successful in stopping them giving the anthrax vaccines years ago when they weren't approved. So it's not like Lou doesn't win some of these things. I mean, he does, for sure.
That's good, yeah.
I have a question for you. How is it that, we've been seeing the interest rates move, and surely I want your opinion on that, but this morning, I don't know if you noticed the year-over-year rent increase number for the month is 9.3%. Okay, yet if I look at the CPI, I'm looking right at the table here, rent of primary residence increase in the last year is 2.4%. So obviously there's an oopsie there of some sort.
Yeah. A lot of geographic regions or a lot of, price points. I would say that I think the 9 number sounds a lot more reasonable, and I think housing in general has been, has been double digits, over the past year. Those are the numbers that I have seen. So, yeah, you really got to look carefully at the numbers and what's behind them and, where they get them. And, fortunately, that's what we're used to doing for when we're analyzing companies and if you're looking at a fund, you want to see, or even an ETF, you want to see what's behind it. And, those numbers are definitely not consistent. And I would say the 2.3 is not, not even likely unless it's talking about a certain, specific price point or geographic region or something, everything that we're hearing across the board is higher, closer to double digits, both in housing prices as well as rentals.
Well, they've got owner's equivalent rent, which is the their idea of housing prices is 2.3, and most places it's been what, 15 or 20? But my question to you, I think we opine on the numbers, we'll agree on that, but the thing I don't know is, I'm hoping you do, not that you ever worked for the CPI people, but if you did, I mean, someday, somewhere, Dan, those things, unless we're just going to, I'll use the term lie forever, one of these days, that adjustment has to click. I mean, someday, somewhere, I mean, these houses aren't going to be $1 million, and these guys keep saying they're the same as they were when they were 200. I mean, somewhere along the line, this thing has to pop. Now, is it something, and this is more of a bigger question, I've noticed even way back in the 70s that the CPI was somewhat of a lagging indicator. Is there something in the system that causes that to be that way? I mean, in other words, is there going to be all of a sudden an adjustment in November or December's numbers where all of a sudden that's going to pop and all of a sudden we're going to see a 1% number because they're catching up in housing or they're catching up in something? Or does it just gradual out or never match up? I mean, I don't know that much about it. I wish I did. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, it's been an ever-changing issue as we moved more into the technology world. And it's, certain areas, food being one of them, gas being one of them, housing, not having the same representation that they did in CPI, like when we were starting out in the business. And for whatever reason, which I'm not really totally sure, because those are the items that the consumer, sees. They see gas price increases in gas price, rent price, grocery prices. So there is more talk, unofficial talk, that you're hearing from reporters and more reports coming out saying that, yes, indeed, we are seeing these double-digit increases, and no, they may not be transitory. And yes, you are right. Sometimes they're adjusted from the prior quarter or the prior month, and that's added back into it. But, people are looking at that number initially, and then they're not getting too excited or saying, oh, things really aren't that bad. What I've been doing to get the better information is paying attention more to trade reports that come out from the specific industries. So in looking geographically, but also looking at the full picture. And the sources, as always, the sources of information are really important. So looking at, same thing when you're looking at the employment numbers, you're looking at Bureau of Labor Statistics, but making sure that they're not, averaged over a period of time, or that they haven't taken out, this whole group of people that have stepped out of the workforce, for example. You know, they're counting them as unemployed, and they're not necessarily unemployed. They're just not working right now. They've decided to, to take time off before they go to their next career or start looking for jobs again. So there's, I think the way they're counted, the way it's accounted for both in rent and housing as well as in labor, has to be looked at more carefully before you can put a lot of credence on those numbers, because those numbers are going to sway. They're going to, and unfortunately, hopefully they're not swaying people. I think people now are finally saying, there's absolutely inflation. I think it was Larry Kudlow that I heard saying that last night, and a couple of other people saying, whether or not you want to use the word transitory, at this point we have inflation. So just get out there and go to the store, go to the gas pump, look for a place to live, if you're looking for a rental or a place to buy, there's definitely been inflation. So yeah, the statistics are hard to hard to have a lot of faith in. It's not like years ago you could wait for a certain number that came out on Friday and the payrolls number, and you could be guaranteeing that you're looking at apples to apples. Well, these numbers seem to be changing over time, and of course the world is changing over time, and the way people are getting paid and the way people are working is changing over time. And likewise, the same thing has happened in the rental market. So I don't know what's included in those numbers specifically, whether they might include short-term rentals, whether it's like Airbnbs, which has taken over a big part of the rental market.
Well, they're all in here.
I mean, there seems to be biases in some of the numbers, and I don't know exactly are we looking forward? Are we looking backwards? And I agree with you. They are lagging indicators because we're generally looking backwards. But the people who are paying the rents are usually looking forward. Those individuals are consumers who have to pay the rent, or the rent has gone up for the next year. So it's, it's a little bit hard to understand how the numbers are being reported. I still don't know, though, if you can really say, going way back when, going back to the 60s, 70s, 80s, whether we're really using apples for apples, and whether when we say things are inflation adjusted, whether they're actually purely inflation adjusted, or if they're, there's some other mechanism that's causing these numbers to I try to get information from as many sources as possible and make sure that the sources I'm getting the information from are reasonable. And if the numbers start looking weird, start delving into the numbers a little bit and see where there might be some discrepancies. And actually, really knowing what you're looking for, I think, is very important. One of the sort of studies, if you will, that I've done recently is just on the whole, this employment issue with people saying that, we have all these jobs out there, yet we have all these people who aren't employed. And so there was a local study that was done here in Florida that a guy that I trusted, and he basically sent out resumes to 60 different places looking for entry-level positions. And what he found is he got very few responses. And all of these places were advertising that they were looking for help. And they may have been, workers at a grocery store or people who are in what I would call traditional entry-level jobs that don't require a lot of skills or a lot of training. And what he found is that the interesting piece that he found is that not only was he not getting calls in, he only got, I think, one or two actual interviews out of 60.
Really?
But what he also found is that what they were willing to pay was substandard. Like, in other words, they weren't advertising and saying, hey, we're gonna pay, $15 an hour rather than 10. So I think looking at the actual numbers and actually seeing what's going on day to day is what's important. Sometimes I think when numbers get rolled up to a you know, a global statistical number, that there's some things get lost in translation. You know, some things get lost in the main message that's there. Like people are saying, hey, we're hearing that there's no inflation yet. We're going to the gas pumps and we're seeing it. Hey, we're hearing inflation transitory, but food prices are, keep going up. So,
yeah, you're not really saying that.
I don't believe it's transitory, by the way. I think that we are seeing, I think some of it is, but I do think we are seeing increases. I do think that companies can pass along some of these increases, but I do think the consumer is the one who's going to be feeling the brunt of this. I do think the supply chain issues, for example, having to pay to get truckers to drive the trucks, which has been an issue with a lot of trucking companies. You're going to have to pay these guys more to get them out, to get, good quality people out there on the road. You're going to have people working at night and on the weekends. You're going to have to, and so on. And I think that's going to cost companies more, and that's going to trickle down to the consumer. So there's only so much that can be passed along, and until a company is going to say, it's just, we have to start increasing costs.
Dan, did you just say?
I think we're in that place right now. Not necessarily bad. It's not necessarily a bad place to be, but it's just something you need to be truthful about.
As my guest, who always has the higher, thinks human beings are in the higher level of things than me, and I always sound like the sniping guy next to you. Did you just say that maybe somebody says they can't find workers and really aren't paying them very much and really don't want to find them at the price they need to pay? Did you just say that?
Yeah.
This is Dan Janitas just said that?
I mean, this local article said that at the entry level, people who were saying that they needed help and, weren't actually willing to pay, what the going rate was. We're still trying to pay rates from, minimum wage or, last year's minimum wage would have been.
Dave, do not title this today's show, Dan Falls Into the Conspiracy Wheelbarrow. Do not do that.
I won't put it on.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I think what you have to look at is you can look at it, say in a particular region and see what's happening, or you could look at a particular subcategory and you could take a subsample, if you will. But you have to. The point I'm making with all this is that I think you have to look at the whole picture, and the whole picture is kind of hard to put together. Because you've got different pieces of it. You've got, some of the obvious pieces, like, the supply chain where, with the container ships are having time issues getting in and out of the ports. And, by extending the hours, that's one way of improving that. But you also have to pay workers more to work overnight, and you have to get more workers there. And you have to attract workers, and that's only going to happen, I think, with higher wages. And there has to be some appeal to that. That's a big, that I think would be a better example and a bigger part of this. But no matter what, it's very hard to see that that's not going to translate into higher costs of goods.
Well, one of the reasons
higher costs of materials.
Okay. Well, one of the reasons why I asked
whatever is on these, whatever is on these container ships are, it's going to cost more to ship them.
Well, I also think that those guys, I've been in trouble with those guys. You know the people in the business. But I mean, when they say, there's a 4-day delay, is the normal delay 2 days or 1 day? I mean, it becomes the news for the day. But one more question regarding on the CPI stuff. The reason why I ask is it's, nobody else maybe would care, but what you and I do for a business is manage money for people. You more in the fixed income than me and the other stuff, but still, we're in the same business. My question is if these guys, let's just take the rent piece. If they're just flat out lying and are continue to lie, I guess maybe they'll get away with that until guys like you and I figure it out, and maybe we already have. But my concern is for both of us is if all of a sudden they're just slow and it maybe this other thing that I read today about the 9.3% that the CPI group is going to make the same conclusion, and all of a sudden they're going to have a catch up in November. We're going to see a monthly CPI of like 1.3%. Well, that's going to have a massive effect on what you own and what I own. And I'd love to know which it is, I guess is what I'm saying. If they're going to keep lying, I guess that's one thing. If all of a sudden they're going to say, oops, we've been wrong for a year, let's make this all right and see some big fat number coming down. I mean, you and I don't know that we're ready for that, are we?
Well, it means that rates are going to, you know, interest rates are going to be higher. And that's something that I think we're ready for. How quickly it happens, I think, is what we may not be ready for. Right. And how quickly these numbers get readjusted, as you're saying, we may not be ready for. What it'll do, though, is it'll cause more, I think, a little bit less credence in the system, a little bit less comfort in the system, and a little more, you know, let's do this on our own in terms of trying to get our, you know, rather than just using government statistics, let's get to the sources. What we do, one thing that I do, and I have the benefit of talking to the CEOs of the companies that we manage, so we go through all these questions with them. Yeah, are you having, you know, where are the problems? Where is the breakdown of the system? Are you having problems with labor? Are you having problems with raw material costs? Is it a timing issue? Is the supply chain really causing the time to be an issue? And for the most part, the general message has been, yes, we are going to have to increase prices. Yes, there are supply chain issues out there. Yes, there are labor issues out there. And I'm hearing it across the board. You know, certain industries, like, you know, that are like the entertainment industry, which we're in, you know, media industry, may not be as directly impacted. But if you're talking about most goods and services, you are talking about increases in prices. You can do your own homework where you live and see what's going on. But I think, you know, talking directly to those companies that participate in these industries that are impacted by these issues, that is supply issues, labor issues, those are the guys that are going to give you the straight scoop and the information on what's really going on. And if somebody's telling me that, you know, in the housing market that the houses are, you know, there's been a shortage, because you can read an article and it says, oh, yeah, you know, houses are growing at this rate. I live in a development that is growing like crazy. I mean, it's selling like crazy in, here in Southwest Florida, and the articles here are just talking about the abundance, you know, like the huge demand for housing, and how that there's been no slowdown, and the price increases have gone up astronomically, and that, you know, means that rent has gone up as well. And then I look to other parts of the country, and I know there are places where that isn't happening to the same degree, but, you know, for the little bit of travel that I have done, I've seen, you know, significant increases in other parts of the country as well. And the same thing, talking to people who live in those places, whether it be residential or commercial. So despite, you know, we might have seen some, when we're talking about rentals, we may have seen some, you know, people working from home now that had offices. So I don't know whether that accounts for a certain number of people. There's certain places I know in the Boston area for a period of time, in a certain part of the city, you know, when the kids weren't going to school, you know, those apartments that cater to college students were having a little bit of trouble renting them. But those issues are already behind us. So those, I would say, if anything, if the numbers appear lower, it might be more, that might be more temporary issue than if the numbers appear higher. And it might be based on some specific, you know, nuances of a particular market. So looking at the whole piece, I don't have quite as much faith in the whole piece. And I think, as technology has become a larger part of our economy, it's a lot more difficult to analyze that piece. You know, when you start seeing the price of an iPhone increase, then you know that that inflation is really there, and it's some of its components and you know, cost of manufacturing. And,
Dan,
and
if you and right, I were, but, if you were, I,
when it comes to that input into CPI, you know, there's still a lot of important inputs, I think, that are, our system of collecting data does lack, and it is going to take a little bit of time, I think, for people to see the real results.
Well, Dan, do you think? I may have heard this story before, but I was the inflation guy at Pullman back in the '70s, right? So back when we had, you know, the big inflation issue, and well, I think we have it again now. We're just not showing it yet. But the weird part I never crossed my mind. Even then, I was a little bit of a conspiracy guy that the CPI was a crummy number. I mean, when we, you know, when I called the guys at Boston and I said, hey, the CPI was up, you know, 2% last quarter. By the way, we're adding 2% to the price of the rail car contract. They'd say, 2% looks like the number. Go ahead. Send us a letter. We'll sign it. You know, it was, but now if you and I were negotiating the deal you know, for the John Deere people and looking for a cost of living increase, there's no way in hell I'm trusting this thing. I mean, the idea that the last 20 years, you know, inflation is up 50%, give me a friggin' break. They're not even close. So, I mean, I don't know what I'd use, but like I said, back in Pullman days, the thought of us not trusting the CPI, even though we knew it was kind of a lagging indicator, we never thought it was crooked. I mean, now I wouldn't trust this thing. I mean, would anybody?
Yeah, I hear you, and I agree with you. I wouldn't necessarily trust it. And I think the other part of that that's important is when you're looking at the wages or average salaries of people coming out of school and what the cost of real estate is vis-a-vis those wages. And now things are changing because people are working remotely and working from home. And but, you know, go back to, you know, my parents' generation when, you know, my father was able to afford his first house and he hadn't even finished law school, you know, and they didn't have family money. So it was, you know, that never would have happened in our generation. And then the generation behind us, the kids are having a much harder time affording real estate in the cities than we did at our, you know, when we were younger and coming out of the workforce. So there has been a cost of living adjustment. I mean, that's trended towards, you know, lower wages relative to cost of property and cost of, you know, of goods and services. And that, I think, you can probably do that analysis without having, looking strictly at CPI numbers. That you can look at, here's where the average salary was in the city, here's what the average rent or, you know, cost of a new home was in the city at that time. And that's what, and I think that has created challenges for younger people for the past couple decades. And there has to be some, there has to be a solution to that. So whether the solution is a different type of housing or a different way of getting to that, to the housing or increased wages. Increased wages is what it really all comes down to as far as I'm concerned, because once wages go up, they don't come back down again. Gasoline prices will go up and come down because they're a commodity, but wages generally don't come down after they've gone up. So that has been where we've been the slowest, I think, across the board to increase, and have really waited for data before increasing. And I think that's where a lot of companies have been able to hold off. And like I said, this little study that I was doing, it just, or that I read about, it just sort of drove home that fact that, you know, and I was asking some people at work at like Home Depot, some guys that are retired that are just working there part time, like, so, you know, they don't do it for the money, but they just do it because they're looking to get out there and work and be around people, and yeah, they're certainly not doing it for the money. They're not, you know, they're barely paying minimum wage. I guess knowing what the components are, knowing what's at the getting the real data and getting the real day-to-day, what's really going on day-to-day, rather than making these sweeping generalizations.
Dan, do you have a...
And the point...
I don't think you know exactly how accurate you are. I'm looking at the... You said 20 years ago? Median income, 2000, according to this is the U.S. debt clock, 31,000. Median income now, 36,000. I'm going to say it's a little light. Let's say 37, 38. Median new home... 2000, guess what?
I don't know.
167. Today, 368.
Yeah.
So whatever you just said, you're not only right, you're right times four.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, that's where you're looking at the numbers, and that's where the pressure is on wages. You know, it has to be on wages, and that's where I think there's been a lot of reluctance to increase wages. But those, I mean, again, just think about truck drivers. If you're thinking about the supply chain, the demand to get more people, you know, you're going to have to pay. The companies are going to have to pay more. That's going to have to translate into higher costs. And so I don't think it's a bad thing, but I don't see a way out of not having inflation.
Well, we could always cut the salary of the guy who runs a trucking company. He's kept pace.
Yeah, and how's that going to go?
Well, you know what? So when it hurts, it should, as they say, you know.
Yeah.
I used to take the CTA bus, and I don't know, David, I don't know if you... if you were on the CTA when you went to school, but they used to try and sell advertising, and they couldn't sell it all right. And so one of the things up, then they would put these little sayings up there where they couldn't sell it. And one of them was, when the truth hurts, it should. There's something to be said for that, I guess, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think paying attention to it and being on top of it's really important. And I think that's important to us, because we need, one of the things I ask management all the time, like, what are your concerns? What are your biggest concerns? What are your concerns on the cost side? What are your concerns on the competition side? What are your concerns with, you know, if they're getting goods from overseas? And those are things that are really important to pay attention to, because once it's too late, all of a sudden, like you said, you're looking at one of the newscasters last night was looking at the gas price, she said, and, you know, as she was driving to her studio, and I'm just laughing, thinking, was this really the first time you noticed it?
Because, yeah, really.
You know, it's pretty much a rampant thing. So I think paying attention is really important. And
Dan,
and
next week, we got a dash here, but next week I'm going to talk a little bit more about specific stuff here. Who knows where the market will be, but I'm having an issue not just with me, actually not with me so much because I just protected, but a lot of other guys that I'm with these groups with, they're doing stuff, you know, not exactly what you're doing, but they maybe have dividend stocks, and well, the stock is up so much that they don't like the dividend rate anymore, so we're ending up in a lot of cash, not wanting to be. And I'm just wondering if you're having the same problem. Let's talk about, well, problem. I guess if the market goes down, it's not a problem. It means we're a genius, right? But, you know, that's not kind of what we're trying to do. But next week, let's talk about it. What should we be doing? Because we're just getting cash spilling no matter, just by being prudent, you know, letting stuff go and it gets a little too high. And all of a sudden, we're like, wow, what are we doing with all these millions of dollars? We got to do something with them. So next week, let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, the good news is that a lot of what we are doing is doing very well. Like we talked about preferreds, MLPs, REITs, yeah. Utilities, and higher inflation, higher interest rates are, these stocks do well, these bonds do well. So, yes. Have some ideas about it, and hopefully I'll be back there in 2 weeks.
Oh, that'd be great. Well, something will happen. Some other airline will go on strike, and you won't get here.
No. You know, hopefully that's behind us.
I think so, too. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up, I'm sorry, down 11. NASDAQ Futures down 42, so used to being up. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Well, on Workplace Stocks and Jacks, I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. S&P Futures down 950. NASDAQ Futures down 37. We've been down here, actually down a little bit more than this. We're coming back a little bit. Dow Futures down 97. They were down over 100 at one point. Again, the news out of Asia is that Evergrande is down 12.6%. Whatever deal they supposedly had evidently is breaking apart. I don't know if they ever had one in the first place, but it made everybody feel better about it at least for 10 days. Now we're worried about Evergrande again, at least a little bit. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 4. They're not worried about it very much. It's flat. They have the FTSE down 37.5%. CAC around down 22.3%. Been almost a giddy market for the last few days. I mean, everybody so bullish. We're awash with money. Bitcoin's up. Everything's up. So Asia, we got the Nikkei down 546. It's 1.9%. Not sure why they're down so much, because Evergrande is traded on the Hang Seng. But Shanghai is up 7.2%. Hang Seng down 118. I don't think Evergrande is in the index. Could be wrong there, but I doubt it. That's 0.5%. So kind of ad market over in Asia. Way of review, yesterday the Dow was up 152, S&P up 16, NASDAQ was down 7. So NASDAQ had broke their four-day win streak, but they've still been up. They were up 6% in like the last 8 trading days, so it's been a lot. Bonds up 3 basis points, 1.67 now, making their way towards 1.7. I think that, I think it's going to go higher pretty fast here, but then again, don't listen to me. Bund, minus 0.11, and Japan, positive 0.09, they are unchanged. We've got oil, down, 47 cents, 82.95, Brent down 77 cents, 85.05, natural gas down another 9 cents, well, right where they were yesterday, 5.07, went up later in the day and it came back down this morning. RBOB down a penny at 2.49, we've got gold, not only down $2, 17.82. We had a big run up yesterday. Silver down 20 cents, 24.24. Copper down 11 cents, 4.62. And we've got Bitcoin trading minus $1,400, but still 64,993. Jobless claims, 290 versus the, 300,000 expected. So 2 weeks in a row, under 300,000. I guess that's good. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. It's 7:36 in Chicago. Currently, the weather's 57 and cloudy, and that's where we're going to stay today. Chance of rain this afternoon. Phoenix listeners, start of the day 60 and clear. They're going to have a high of 90 degrees with a lot of sunshine. Traffic building up on the Eisenhower and Kennedy due to long-term construction. There's heavy traffic on the exit ramp and the tri-state at the Eisenhower, and also at... Excuse me, there's slow traffic on the ramp at I-90 at East River Road. In sports, NBA opening night, the Bulls beat the Pistons 94-98. Nuggets beat the Suns 110-98. Baseball last night, playoffs, Braves beat the Dodgers 9-2 to take a 3-1 lead in the series. And Houston best Boston 9-1, up 3-2 in their series. NFL Broncos at Browns tonight, Bears at the Bucks Sunday afternoon, and Texans at Arizona. The Hawks take on the Canucks at home tonight, and NCAA football, USC at Notre Dame Saturday night. Back to you, Tom.
So when your predecessor, Angelica, give that, I was thinking about her this morning because we had Bulls and Pistons. She goes something like, Bulls lose to Pistons. Tom, what are Pistons? And she goes, and something about Bulls lose all the time anyway. Why do I have to give the score?
Actually, I talked to my son who follows them, and he said the Bulls are going to be a lot better this year. They're a completely different team.
Oh, yeah.
I don't follow the NBA, but
Maddie's the same way. They got like 3 All-Star. They got some guys. Well, the center was a big pickup last year.
Yeah, they got LaMelo Ball, and he was just telling me. I watched a little bit with him. I go, I'm out. I don't want to watch this.
Well, the one forward's pretty good. The kid they drafted last year, the last 2 years.
Well, they got a kid from Chicago, right?
Yeah.
That they picked up. So,
yeah.
Good for him.
So, John, how are you?
I'm fine, Tom. How about you?
Okay, we were just interesting conversation with Lou, and interesting conversation with Dan. What do you you know, talk about? You know, whenever you see something, and then I hear about it on the air, it's really amazing. Fortunately, I don't have to do much in the way of meds, but there's one prescription I get from Walgreens. I'm supposed to get 90 days, right? Some slight little high blood pressure thing. Thank God I don't have it too bad. And I'm supposed to get 90. I go over and I get home and they give me one. No, really? How does somebody, when a prescription calls for 90, to give somebody one? I mean, what manner of moron would anyway, so of course I have to go back. First thing they say is, well, we're short-handed. I said, you got six people here. What do we need our list of excuses? Now, but Dan just mentioned something about you can't listen to the radio for 2 seconds after you get in the car. We saw somebody's bleeding about can't get workers, can't get this, shortages here, shortages there. Dan just said that somebody he either knew or whatever just did a study. They took 60 people, firms that were allegedly help wanted, and sent applications to all 60 of them, and he only heard back from one. Is this all BS, Jen? I mean, or is this some of it? I mean, is it? I always have the sign out there for somebody at $10 an hour, just in case some moron comes in and will work for that, or when I know I have to pay 15. Do we keep the sign out there just trolling? It's like used trucks on the internet. There's people wanting $20,000 for a 25-year-old truck, and it's always going to be there. I mean, it's not like they're ever going to hit the bid like they have to sell it. It's just always going to be there, hoping somebody shows up and in a fit of stupidity pays $20,000 for it. I mean, are we dealing with the same thing here with people or what?
Well, it could be. I think if there is a great reset, as we're told there is, $15 an hour isn't going to turn on a lot of people who in any other time would be hungry and anxious to work for $12.50 or $10 an hour. Will $25 an hour make them more anxious? Maybe, you know, 50, perhaps. I'm just saying, I think people are waking up, maybe, and maybe they were kind of making up for the times in the past where they just went along with the way things were. But they're not going to work for $15 an hour. They can, you know, make that any other way through COVID assistance or you name it. I think that it's just, you know, if they get moratoriums on their rent and they get stockpile whatever money they have, and they don't have to pay that out to somebody else. They don't need to work. We've created, though, I think, a culture where it will take more than I think most businesses can afford to pay, even in the hungriest times, to get enough people to come back to where we used to be. We're not going to get back to where we used to be. You're going to have a very different workforce, maybe a savvier workforce, maybe a more diluted workforce, too. I don't know, but it's not ever going to be the same. I just don't see it coming back that way. When it comes to scales for wages or benefits that you promise people, whatever, it's a completely different ballgame.
Well, Jen, the last, I'm going to say, pushing 40 years. I mean, I took, remember the Coach Leahy, the economics professor?
Oh, yeah.
That all the football players all took because he gave them all A's. I mean, but he actually was pretty good teacher. I took him for urban economics, and I think I took him for labor economics. And labor economics is a fascinating subject. And basically, I mean, everything economically, that's why I think when you see stuff happening now and you hear people on TV, even people that are supposedly educated on this subject, now obviously they know way more than me on other subjects, you wonder if they ever took a course. Because virtually everything, I mean, Your dollar is just another good, right? There's a supply and demand for currency, and if you pour so much into the supply, guess what? You know, it's worth less. Duh. I mean, but labor is the same way. And you see, you know, big things that changed in labor. I mean, historically, when Roosevelt came in, and he basically enacted all these child labor laws. So you had to be 16 to work instead of, what, 14, right, or something?
Yeah.
And, so what he really did was, took, you know, 300,000 people out of the labor force. I mean, in terms of economics. And all of a sudden people said, well, if I can't get the 15-year-old girl to sign, you know, to sew blue jeans, I'm going to have to, and she's out of here, I got to pay the other people more, or else they're going to go somewhere else to get a job. I mean, so you essentially affect the supply and demand, and you get these discontinuities. Well, I'm not saying that was a discontinuity, but that was only morality in my mind, but the, in the last however many years, this offshoring One of the key things is you will when you start hiring people, and the first person you pay him $10 an hour, and he all of a sudden, instead of your firm making, you know, $50 a day, you make $100 a day, so the guy's worth $50 to you, and you're paying him $10, and you say, okay, well, gee, I better hire somebody else. So you're another guy or lady, and all of a sudden, made a second person. There's a decrease in the marginal utility of the next employee, just like any other economic graph. So the next person might be worth $40 to you. Let's hire another guy. Then it's 30. Finally, you get down to where the last person only increases your revenue on the day by $10. So it's even. And then you say, okay, I don't need to hire anybody else, because if I hire anybody else, he's not even worth to me what I'm paying him.
And maybe I can trim my stuff.
Or maybe you can. Well, you like to get to the point where, yeah, you know, even
yeah,
if
you
it's,
want to get there first.
Yeah, even, if, it, right, even right. if you're paying somebody $10 and he gives you $11 more wages or revenue, it's still worth it to you, right?
Right.
But it keeps each individual person becomes less and less and less until you get to the point where you're at equilibrium, and that's where you should be. Well, in the last 40 years with the offshoring, by the way, the same thing holds true for executives, even though they don't think so. They think they're special. But the fact is, you know, CEOs and CFOs, there's all kinds of them, right? I mean, I'm not going to say they're a dime a dozen, but basically, there's, you know, you don't have very many Bill Gateses in there. I'll use Steve Jobs in there to have the vision on top of it. Basically doing the job and running a company, and there's a lot of guys can do that. But the point being is, we've had, in my mind, this discontinuity because you can offshore you're to some other place where they're paying people 50 cents an hour. The people on the low end have gotten basically the shaft now for a long period of time. And if you look at any one of these firms, the CEOs and CFOs are now making, you know, 1,000 times what a worker makes when it used to be 10 times. So and by the way, rents are probably higher, and who knows? Maybe even dividends are higher than they ought to be. So now all of a sudden, you know, labor is getting a little bit of a push. Now you walk into a Dunkin' Donuts, for instance, and they don't want to give somebody a raise from $10 to $12 an hour. Well, what does that person do? Well, if that person, if they're good, is gonna dish out what, 200 coffees an hour at $3 a pop? That's $600. And you want to, you know, and somebody good probably can do 50 coffees more than somebody else, right? You know, I mean, the person who can put out, you know, how many breakfasts in one of these breakfast places, a really good breakfast cook can do what? 30 of them an hour, at least? And you're charging $12 for an omelet, and you don't want to give the guy 11 instead of 10? I mean, really? So, I mean, I think there's been a big discontinuity, Jan, like you say, and now there's like a catch-up. No, I'm not going to work for 11, and we're not talking 11 versus 10. We're talking, let's start the negotiation at 20, because that's really what I'm worth in today's price world, right?
Plus, what you describe as a meritocracy, where if somebody was pushing that number of coffee cups every hour, that would be recognized and would make you eligible for a promotion of some kind. But the meritocracy has kind of gone out of the labor market, too, because there's so many spots reserved for particular groups, ethnicities, gender, whatever, where meritocracy doesn't drive promotions anymore. It's all about, you know, unless you can check up these boxes next to your name, you're not even in the running for anything, so be happy with what you got. In other times, you know, this is how the companies prospered and how, you know, wages increased generally for everybody. If the productive employees were the ones who were rewarded. But now the productive employees are treated less well than anybody else. You really just have to get by in a lot of, you know, industries now to keep a job. It isn't like you get any more credit or more money if you excel at it. In fact, the message I get from on high is don't excel. That destroys our vision of what equity should be. Nobody should be doing any more or getting paid any better, whatever, than anybody else, which is a sure way of discouraging creativity and energy and stick-to-itiveness. You turn people into Soviet-style workers where nobody really does very much at all. They certainly don't work to their potential, and they're perfectly happy, and they get paid reasonably well, but nothing gets done.
Well, I always believe that if any one of the, even the listeners who write in and disagree, I'm going to say if me and one of those listeners and you, and we'll even bring David with us, I don't know about David, but if we went and worked in the tire shop in the Walmart, I guarantee you, in 2 months, we would be selling 30 to 50% more tires than the guys before us. Guarantee it. I mean, just because it's just the way we are, you know. And I don't think Walmart's set up to give us a dime for that.
Of course not, no.
Matter of fact, we're probably, if we demand more, they're going to be pissed off. Who are these guys demanding more? Say, hey, buddy, I just sold $4,000 worth of tires today. You're giving me, you know, $80. Thanks for nothing. I mean, right?
Right. But you know, in the past, Tom, businesses that were smart would recognize talent or you know energy or whatever that you couldn't really put a price tag on and cultivate it and show by example that this is what we want employees to do and the kind of way they present themselves. And if you are really interested in being promoted, you've got to show some kind of hunger, and you got to work a little harder than the next person. And if you do that, we will recognize it. We're certainly not going to discourage it. Well, now you've got a culture that demands that you not work harder than anybody else.
Well, and you have people, and especially in the restaurant business, that believe they should get a really good employee for $10 an hour. That's their entitlement.
And in the past, they could.
In the past, they could, but they didn't realize that the reason why they could is because of a 40-year or 25 or 35-year plan or a way where people didn't have any power whatsoever, right? And that's why we have, you know, a 15-20% raise in the last 20 years while CPI is up 50, right? And that's cheating probably. So
right, they did just the bare minimum. It kind of give the impression that they're keeping up, but of course they weren't.
Yeah, I mean, I did this thing for maybe 2 years ago when they were first talking about people not getting off the sofa. And I said, okay, if somebody's going to make $10 an hour, I just went through the chart for Illinois. And I said, if your great uncle gave you $5,000 for a jalopy, which you could basically buy a car that ran halfway decently a year and a half, 2 years ago for $5,000. I said, if somebody gave you the money and paid for the insurance and paid for the gas, just the cost of sales tax on the car, you know, for like the fourth time you're getting sales tax on the same friggin' car as when it was new. Okay, so sales tax on the car, title, city sticker, state plate, I was up to $600 and some just for the transfer stuff. And the tax on the car itself. So your first 66 hours went to the state. You know, if you're making $10 an hour. And that's it. That's assuming you didn't pay any parking, you didn't pay any gas, and you weren't paying any insurance.
So, that would have paid for the car.
And not paying for the car. So I mean, that's my first week and a half, I'm sending the check to Uncle Jay Pritzker, right? Okay, that's cool. And Aunt Lori. That's cool. Right? So now, I don't think you can get anything that runs. It has tires for $5,000. It's got to be 10. And now, so now the tag, now what is it? $1,000? And plus, Uncle's got to give you $10,000 instead of $5,000. We talk about, oh, some guy sitting on his sofa, and why shouldn't he go work for $10 an hour? Because I need him to make my sandwich. Well, that's cool. You know, but now the weird part is the price of the sandwiches has doubled, and now there's nobody there to make them. So, because they're not spinning it down the line at all. I mean, I'm not talking, you know, I think, John, you're much more conservative about than me in a lot of these issues, but what I'm talking about is pure economics. There's no debate here is how economics works, I don't think, is there?
No. It's all about what I've talked about before, Tom, is that, you know, you're now seeing how people are being forced, you know, to reduce their living standard, reduce their appetite, whether it's their appetite for fossil fuels or the right even to be able to afford a car of any kind, whether it belches, you know, smoke or not. It's about making you make do with less and be happy with it. And ultimately to have nothing attached to your name. You don't own any. I mean, they've said this. This is the goal of the globalists that have tried to, you know, manipulate the world's economy in a way that, of course, makes it impossible for the average person to get by with any kind of hope of ever earning more or owning anything. But that suits the globalist, you know, enterprise perfectly. And the U.S. has always been the sticking point. It sticks in the craw of these people.
Well, I'm supposed
to
be
the one that gives lie to this. But it's still being pushed down our throats, and people nowadays seem perfectly happy with riding bikes around. Next, it'll be rickshaws or whatever. It's not going to be cars, I can tell you that. You can't afford a car with what people are making today.
Well, I don't. The interesting part is, I don't know, the shift in the politics, and we were, you know, Lou and I were discussing it. I don't get it. The I'm going to say the freedom, the intrusion in freedom used to come from the right. Now it's coming from the left. Is it just everybody wants to be a dictator no matter which side they're on or what?
Well, my jaw dropped the other day, Tom, when I saw the head of the ACLU in Illinois talking about the police, you know, department's action here about not complying with the vaccine reporting portal that the city mandated. And I thought if this guy were from any other group in the ACLU, you know, this might fly. But the fact that this is the ACLU is just saying, why would you have a right to a conscience when it comes to negotiating these things? You know, Illinois has this Health Care Right of Conscience Act. It's really going to be tested, you know, pretty soon. I'm sure it's probably already being tested. I don't know what the lawsuits are. But to show you what the culture of what Lou was talking about earlier, this act, if you read it, it makes it look like anybody who is trying to oppose getting a mandatory vaccine is perfectly within their rights to declare, according to the Illinois Health, you know, Right of Conscience Act, I don't have to take this, and this law, this mandate, whatever, is unconstitutional. But now they're retooling the act because they want to, of course, not give people any exemption or protection under this thing. And Emily Bittner, who is one of Pritzker's deputies, came out with a statement in which she says, you know, the governor is working on retooling this act so that it can't be used by, quote, fringe elements to declare exemption from the vaccine mandate. Now, once you call somebody a fringe element, it's worse than deplorable in a way, because you're now making them somebody, you know, characterizing them as if they are somehow a lunatic.
I don't even think so far
off the radar that your opinions wouldn't matter in even the most liberal society. But this is, you know, a Democratic governor's deputy saying this, and all of a sudden anybody who thinks that the government shouldn't be able to mandate a vaccine is somehow, in their eyes, a fringe element. But at least I know where they stand now, and I know where I stand, too.
Well, Jan, how was it that, I mean, I tell everybody I'm in the middle, which I am now, okay? There's no doubt about that. And but I have no problem being a serious Democrat from 35 years ago. Why do these people get to use the name of my party when they're not anywhere near my party? Do you think Paul Simon, Adlai Stevenson,
Ellen Dixon,
Ellen Dixon, any of these people would want any part of this mess? They'd run screaming faster than I am. How do they get to use our name? They should call themselves something else. But they're not the Democratic Party of the unions and those kind of guys. And I don't think this Republican Party is anywhere near the Adlai Stevenson, the Peter Fitzgerald, those kinds of guys that were good, Chuck Percy, that were good people too. They're people have stolen both of the names, I think.
Well, you're right, Tom. They have, you know, I've told people in political, you know, discussions that should be more civil than they really are most of the time, that the Democratic Party left me. I didn't leave the Democratic Party.
I was
perfectly happy to stay a Democrat. It was the last, you know, five generations of my family were that I've been able to track.
I'm going to say that you and Kevin and Lou, maybe not Lou, all vote for Paul Simon tomorrow.
If Paul Simon were what Paul Simon was,
yes.
You know, in 1988 or whatever, you know, and I did vote for Paul Simon, but I don't think Paul Simon would be Paul Simon anymore.
Well, I can't believe...
The Democrats would have burned him out of his office a long time ago.
Well, one of the most, brilliant men...
There'd be no place for a Paul Simon in the Democratic Party. He'd have to run on some other lunatic fringe.
He'd have to be a libertarian or something. But a few months ago, maybe, without any sort of fanfare, one of the most brilliant, best legislators that ever was in the state of Illinois, Adlai Stevenson, died, and he didn't even get a... He didn't even give a blip. I mean, if he would have been a rap singer, he would have got more of an obituary than he got.
It shows the collective amnesia of the party bosses who have been, I think, really subverted, co-opted, had brain transplants. I mean, whatever the explanation is, but they want to get as far away from their past and their roots and their. I mean, look at Thomas Jefferson's statue being removed from New York City offices. What does that tell you about who's next on the chopping block? Adlai Stevenson, probably.
Yeah.
There's no room for any kind of tradition or allegiance to what you were. It's all about erasing the past. It's the communist agenda. It's what the Chinese have tried a couple times in the last 7 years to do with more or less success. They're still trying to do it. And it's been taken up in this country by people who maybe don't think they follow China's dictates.
Kathy Durbin.
Giving every indication they do.
We got a dash down, but Kathy Durbin somewhere buried my emails. Kathy sent me a thing with the two pictures were Stalin. Totally erased the guy out of the picture with him. I got to find him. We got to tweet him out. They are so special. This is so Stalin-esque where you go back and erase your past. You know, you can't erase your past. It's your past. What can I tell you? I sure wish I could have. My past was I made it out in a playoff game 25 years ago. I sure wish I'd have got a hit. Maybe if I go back and rewrite history, I really got a hit. No, I didn't. I made it out. Anyway, on that happy note, John, I think I'm going to see you tonight.
I think so too. Look, it looks pretty good, Tom.
So who's hurting
rain
the
rain at all? You
so who's hurting the cats? You or me? I don't know if I want that job. SP Futures down 9.25. NASDAQ Futures down 36. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
No, sir. No, no either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.